Hi everyone, this is Scott Weigert from Bates. I want to welcome you to our latest Bates XPI Community of Practice webinar. Thanks so much for joining us today. Today we'll be doing a case study on leading innovation, and then we're going to segue from that into a more general discussion of what we've learned about the XPI with innovation research. So I'm joined today by my colleague Michael Sychek, and I'll show you a photo of us here. So Michael, you want to say hi to the folks?
Hi, everybody, and welcome to our webinar.
Yeah, so we're going to take about half of our time to review a case study of a leader that I worked with in July. And then after that, we'll kind of turn that over to Michael to lead us through some of the real exciting stuff that he's done on innovation. So as we go along, if you have any questions, by all means, feel free to either type them in if you like, or if you're in a situation where you're in a quiet enough space where we can unmute you, just click on that raise hand element and we will be able to unmute you and have you chat for a little bit. So we'll be turning that over to folks in a little while. So let's just get underway with our case and jump right in. I did make a number of things available in the content portal. Usually what I find is some people really like to do the deep dive into that data, and other people just prefer to turn up and have and look at the data and react to it that way. Either way is fine, of course, but I'll give you a little bit of background on the case. And I want you to really be thinking about what sense you can make of it. I will be opening up some observations and really want to hear what you think. We have a smart group here, an experienced group, and I want to see what people have to say. So let's move on then to our first topic, which is the case study of a guy we're calling Edward Carbonaro for this purpose. Similar to his name, but a little bit different. So we've redacted all of his materials, and then we'll get into the discussion of innovation. So a little bit about Edward. This was a guy I worked with in July, so a pretty recent call, and I thought it'd be a really interesting one, a little different from some of the usual ones that I get to do here at Bates. So his job title is Program Leader of Operational Excellence. He works for a manufacturing firm that you would be familiar with. You have used their products, I'm sure. And he's been there for a little while. He was brought there a couple of years ago, and they wanted to bring him in to really help with innovation because he has so much experience and expertise in unleashing innovation at another company. So in the orientation meeting, I started learning a little bit more about him. He's been tasked with driving a lot of change and rolling out this new system of innovation management, partly because he had such a terrific track record of doing this at his previous employer. And then when we dug into, you know, we always ask that question, tell me about the enterprise-wide goals at your organization, and then tell me about how your business context or your business challenges, how they fit within that greater picture of the enterprise-wide situation. So as you can see here, he was told, look, we need you to unleash and speed innovation. We're trying to increase quality, decrease costs, and improve the top and bottom line. So I'll give you some more specifics about that. So as you know, the way it works when we do these calls is we do the orientation meeting. And I've become a real believer that before you get back on that second call, the insights call, you really want to not just rehash what the person told you their business context was. You want to kind of play back to them what you heard in your own language and reframe it for them a bit. So here's pretty much the exact language that I had for him here. So what I said here was, you know, what we heard in the last call was the story of a program director in innovation management who coaches project managers in desperate need of an executive presence toolkit. That was his terms. That's why he sought us out. Our intent today is to focus on how we can help you better appreciate your own strengths and executive presence, and how we can leverage them to develop some facets that might help you drive that innovation that's going to result in doing things better, faster, and cheaper, and ultimately contributing to the top line goal that he had mentioned to me of 5% growth and 1% improvement in EBITDA. And that's all amidst this swirl of transformational change that's sealed air. And developmentally, you also mentioned you're interested in tone of voice and influencing tactics in general. That bit about tone of voice and that first conversation in the orientation call was kind of interesting. Kind of a terse with me in that first call, kind of a flat affect, I would say, not a lot of emotion. So he was recognizing that and wanted to do something about that tone of voice in general. So at this point in the conversation, what I'll usually say is, does this seem to nail the business context for you? Have I missed anything important? Do you have any friendly amendments? And he said this really nailed it. He was really pleased with the description and felt like that had synthesized it pretty well. So then, as you know, our next step in the process is to ask for general reactions. But before I get to that, I'm going to just give you a little bit more background on him. When I looked at his data, here were his highest rated items. So if you take a look at this, you get a picture of a leader, very much indexed to integrity. You know, what you notice here at a glance is the top four rated items were all in that character dimension. So that can bode well for him for trust. Really high scores in a couple of those integrity items, and that proved to be significant a little later in the call, as you'll see. And then he got another high score on one of the appearance items. So really good energy to this guy as well. On the lower end, you can see not only were these the five lowest rated items, those mean scores are pretty low. You often will see leaders whose lowest score is a 3.65 or something like that. So these are pretty low as average scores. So interestingly, the lowest two were on vision. So that seemed to be interesting and relevant. One more on the strategic thinking side of vision, one more on inspiration, then a couple on intentionality, which, as you know, is, of course, tethered to vision, that vision with a small v, and then this issue of restraint. So with that in mind, I asked him for his general reactions, and this is what he had to say to me. He said, you know, transparency and restraint really jumped out to me. Transparency builds trust, but I need time to sort through the facts and the conclusion I want to share. But people can read my thoughts. He said, here's a little story for you. My wife was talking about something going on at her church, and I must have looked displeased or unhappy about it or something, because she, before I could say anything, she said, well, you clearly don't agree with me about this. So, and I said, well, you know, I don't remember this the same way you do, but this is an issue I have. People tend to read me. I'd like to work on having more of a poker face. And so I can share what I feel and be more intentional about that. Usually I feel like I'm capable of communicating in a more an intentional, exciting way, but under the pressure of stress, I can struggle with that at times. So from there, we reacted to that a little bit. I think I probably commented on the fact that he was jumping a little bit to the part of the glass that's not full, and I wanted to get him back to talking about strengths. So we talked about his strengths, which were in integrity, appearance, concern, authenticity, and interactivity. In integrity, he told me it's important to do what I say I will do and keep my commitments when he talked about that. So here's where I want to open it up a little bit. I really want to get some dialogue going. So what I want you to do is look at this constellation of his highest and lowest rated facets. So as I mentioned, we talked about some of his strengths and the character dimension and the style dimension. Interactivity was with a bit of a happy blind spot. So he didn't really see himself having that regular quantity and quality of dialogue with folks, but other people were seeing it in him. Where he was concerned was a lot of the lower rated facets in that substance dimension, which, as you know, is equated to credibility. So that was a concern. And then restraint. When we got his developmental summary worksheet, and some of you may have downloaded that, looked at that, I was interested to find that restraint was only, I think, the fifth lowest rated facet, but it was the one he seemed to real index to focus on. And in his worksheet, he said, I struggle with impulsive responses, particularly in aggressive situations or when frustrated. So I'm going to just ask people to raise their hands here and ask them to chime in. So the question I'm going to have you consider here a little bit, and we'll go back to the constellation in a moment, is which facet would you focus on to help Edward become more effective? So we're looking at a development theme. So remember, this is a guy who needs to unleash innovation. So what qualities would be important to kind of getting people on board with some new ways of approaching innovation to drive change, to get people to really focus on how can we increase our product revenues, how can we have better products, how can we lower costs, and so forth. So any reactions or anybody who'd like to just take a shot at, you know, what's working in his favor, would you say, for a guy who wants to unleash innovation and get people to rally around that, what would be the good things maybe you're working on? Then we'll go into what he could get better at. Anybody want to raise their hand and take a shot at it? And I will unmute you if so. Any reactions there from anybody? Anyone? Let's see. I don't know if I could put somebody on the spot. Shirley, help. You mind if I put you on the spot here? I'm going to unmute you and see if you can take a shot at here. What are you noticing, Shirley, here? But first of all, Shirley, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure. Fine. Welcome aboard, Shirley. Glad to have you weigh in. Shirley is not only one of our certified partners, we actually have brought her on board as an associate to help out with some of our orientation and insights calls. So Shirley, as you look at this, you know, you've been doing a lot of these calls lately. Anything that strikes you in terms of, you know, what's the good news for Edward here, for a guy who needs to get people to rally around new ways of doing things, trying to innovate, trying to find ways to do things better, faster, and cheaper? If you were working with him, what would you feel good about and what you see in his strengths?
I think you mentioned earlier the strengths in the character dimension. There's trust there. I think the concerns are really that there's that gaps in the substance dimension with the credibility issues, particularly vision. There's something preventing his vision getting through. You've used a quote that I really like, and that's predictability creates calmness. And there's certainly, particularly in the open-ended comments, somebody who's coming across in an inconsistent way. And I think that's probably one of his biggest challenges.
Okay, so just to keep you on the hook a little longer, Shirley, and then we'll ask somebody else to chime in. If you were to, what do you think would be the most important facet to tackle for him? He was mentioning restraint in his worksheet, as you saw. Where do you think would be a good starting point for him? Or what do you think, what any hypotheses you would have about what's going on here?
You know, one of the things that's coming through is in terms of appearance and interactivity, he's landing stronger than I think he thinks he is. If he's driving a change agenda and looking to take people with him, vision something which is really not getting through for him, and he's got a different view of that. So I think I'd be looking at what's preventing him from actually landing in the way that he intends. What's the disconnect?
All right. Thank you, Shirley. Let's see if we can get some other folks to weigh in here. Anybody else game to? Please raise your hand. If not, I may ask Michael to weigh in just a moment with some thoughts here as well. But maybe I'll put one other person on the spot that I've. Here's Matt. Okay, Matt Chapman from California. Let me unmute you here.
Good.
Okay, hey Matt, how you doing?
It's going well. How are you?
Good. Good to hear from you. How are things out in California?
Things are wonderful in California, and thank you for holding this call because. I was actually excited I carved out this time because I wanted to refresh in my skills on this. So I'm really happy you guys do this in a really good structured way that I think is of any of the different tools. It just seems like you guys consistently do this and just do it in a really refined way. So I just want to compliment you on that.
That's really nice. Thanks so much. So, Matt, taking a look at our case at hand here, anything that jumps out at you or anything you would react to here?
Well, I like how composure's in the center and it's like the hub, and it has the four other things to work on around it, because it seems like somebody who's reached this position, the person might actually have practical wisdom, might actually have vision, But with the composure not being where it needs to be, that perceived executive presence, people may not be hearing the vision or practical wisdom. It just seems like, and with intentionality and the restraint, it just seems like if I honed in on the composure with this person, then people might actually be able to hear some of the practical wisdom or the vision. It would help with restraint. And it also might help with the intentionality. So to calm the person down, get them to relax, get them to listen to people, just all these pieces of composure might have an impact in all the other areas, or it's a way to center the person and then bring in the conversation of the other areas. That's what I was thinking.
Well, very, very astute observations, Matt, I would say. You make an excellent point. I think practical wisdom, in particular, I would say, is almost never a leading thread. And, you know, as you say, we're not dealing with neophyte leaders here. We're dealing with pretty sophisticated people. So I think the way you're looking at it is definitely a way that we always want to look at practical wisdom. It's like sometimes I will start a discussion by getting the person to talk about practical wisdom just to see, well, if I'm not sure what might be behind it. But you're right. That's more of a symptom usually of issues somewhere else. In some cases, if it's a low authenticity, you might feel like, well, this person's not positioning themselves to kind of put their point of view out there. So that's getting in the way, but we see that's a strength there. So I think you've got a lot of really good hypotheses there for starters. So we'll come back to that. Anyone else want to weigh in? I'm going to mute you again for the moment, Matt, but I'm sure we'll have you chime in again, but that's a great contribution. Thanks so much. Okay, anyone else want to chime in? Maybe I'll ask Michael if you have anything you want to add at this point in terms of what you would be noticing, or if you were going into this insights call, Michael, beyond what Shirley and Matt have shared, what would you be maybe considering or looking at?
Thanks, Scott. Well, I think Matt put his finger on it a lot in terms of focusing on the composure piece. So you could focus on composure directly, for example, by giving Edward some tools about, you know, Scott and I often use something called ABCD, which is, you know, ask, breathe, count, defer, something to slow the person down. But you could also attack it through intentionality, getting to the same place, but doing it more through intentionality as an option to going it through just through composure, so that you could give the person tools about how to make sure Edward was getting more input and getting more back and forth. Plus there's one item about, you know, getting back and forth dialogue so you can get alignment. And he got a 3.5 something on that one. So you could also do it through intentionality. Another option, but it would not be my first choice, would be to start with vision, so that people would get a clear idea of what his priorities are and what's his overall compelling reason that they should be changing the way they've been working. But I think I agree with Matt that working on the composure and restraint would be a top priority. But you could get to that through a couple different doors.
Yeah, very helpful, Michael. Thank you. All right. Well, let me weigh in a little bit here on how this unfolded. So I think, you know, Michael gave us sort of an alternate route. What I did was in this call, partly because I tried to just go where the energy of the leader was. So if I had just been looking at his scores, I might have been tempted to go at practical wisdom or vision first, because vision was not only his lowest rated facet, it was also a blind spot for him. He rated it third highest. Everybody else had it rated lowest for him. And, you know, when you think about innovation, I was thinking, boy, maybe he needs to chart a course of where he wants to go. But, you know, I think to Matt's point, you know, he was telling me he had restraint and composure first. So I kind of talked about those together with him a little bit. And as you know, we don't try to jump to solutions. So what I did was just try to explore that with him. So we looked at some of the items under restraint. So one of his lowest was aware of emotions, but not dominated by them. He got a pretty low rating on that. I asked him what triggers his lack of restraint or composure, and he said he wasn't sure of the answer of that at first. And I kind of dug in and said, well, can you think of a time when that may have come up? And when we got going about that, I guess there had been some bad news on an innovation experiment. The underlying issue was not clear. There was a lot of lessons learned, but there was still something wrong with the innovation, whether it was a bad process. And he said, my manager said to me, well, what's going through your mind? He said, I just said I felt overwhelmed and I just wanted to dig into problem solving. And, you know, and she wasn't wanting to go into a lot of detail. So he was feeling very exasperated. And, you know, true to what Matt was predicting, this theme of composure and restraint, when we dug into some of the other facets, it just kept bubbling up. So from after we talked about that, and I was asking him, well, what could you do? He didn't have a lot of great tactics in mind. He said, well, I could try to recognize the situation and slow down by asking questions, like Michael was saying. I was like, yeah, that sounds like a good start. And then, so we started seeing of this, and oh, this is the thing that really, really struck me. At one point, when he was talking about what frustrated him, he said, one conclusion I reached about this company is that it needs a lot of help with problem solving. And I come from a strong culture of that. And I want to help, but their appetite for process is low. All they want to see is results. So it was one of those moments where I kind of laughed to myself. It's like, well, yeah, you know, of course they want to see results. And I think in his mind, you know, the only way you get to the results is through the process. So I started getting this picture. He's getting just agitated and frustrated because he's got this process. It's worked for him in the past. And why can't they see that this process is going to work? All they want to talk about is outcomes. So I kind of parking lot that in my head for the moment. We went on to talk about vision. And he said, we asked about daunting goals and coming off as inspiring, which he had told us he wanted to do. He said, you know, aggression and frustration in my personality just drives people crazy. You know, I've seen 40% increases in throughput by using these processes. I know that they work. So when people don't comprehend that the processes work, it's frustrating. And I'm so transparent, I'm so authentic that comes through. So, you know, he had tried to create a center of excellence. They took it, remade it, they dawdled on it for like a year and finally got it done, but it was still a very chaotic process. And he was really, really frustrated with that. So I'll pause there for a moment just to see if any other questions or comments come in. Feel free to ask a question at this point too, if anything comes along. I don't want to go on too much. But in any event, since I don't see any at the moment, I'll just go on to say, we then went to intentionality, which, you know, Michael expressed, you know, interest in as well. And there was a real big blind spot around clarity of direction and next steps. And that's where his composure was turning into impatience to some degree. And he would have these meetings and just summarize next steps. But he wasn't really, really doing more than that to have real clarity of who was going to be doing what. And then another thing was course corrections was really a problem for him as well. Here's a question that came in too. You know, Isabella asked the question, how is his ability to communicate and share his vision? This would impact his intentionality. That's a great question and observation. So yeah, I think with an issue, he said with the vision that he's more of a fast follower and he wants to get things done quickly. And he felt like the issue was he doesn't really bring people along. So he wasn't really meeting people where they are, I guess is what I would put it. He was very indexed to like trying to drive and push on this thing like these processes work, guys. I've done it before in my old job, this process has worked. And people were kind of like, talk to the hands, you know, I don't really want to hear this. And you're absolutely right. I think with the connection with vision and intentionality, as Isabella's pointing out, there's a quote from Lewis Carroll, Alice in Wonderland. If you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And so there was some of that issue. He had clarity of where he was going, but vision isn't really a vision unless it's landing with people. So people are like, dude, this is a lot of like hardcore process stuff. We can't follow you. That's an issue as well. So we talked about course corrections, and I'll get to what we did about that. But when we did talk about practical wisdom, I said, okay, what about this one of cutting through complexity and getting to the heart of the issue? And that's where this issue, he'd get frustrated, he'd try to persuade harder, and he would do stuff like try to lecture people about the concept of progressive elaboration, which I'm sure if you're an innovation expert as he is, would mean a lot to you. Suffice to say, it did not mean a lot to people in general. But to his great credit, I said, well, hey, you know, if I'm those people who are all focused on outcome, I don't think progressive elaboration is going to really do it for me. So can you think of another way? I said, for example, my son's 18. He knows nothing about your manufacturing industry. He doesn't know that much about innovation. Could you explain to him what progressive elaboration is in terms that he would understand? And he kind of laughed. He said, oh, well, sometimes I have said that it's kind of like peeling the layers of an onion. You know, that's what we're doing. We kind of need to go through a process where we're kind of getting a layer out and getting to the heart of it that way. I'm like, well, dude, you're right there. That's great. That really would work for me. So he recognized that that was within him to do something about that. So anyway, just to wrap up this portion of it, because I want to get to Michael's bit again, let's talk about, we focused on restraint and composure as a place to start. And I guess another question I want to open it up to and see your thoughts are before I talk about what I did would be this. What strength does Edward have that you might be able to leverage? So we agreed that he needed to work on restraint and composure. We agreed that vision and intentionality kind of work together, as Isabella suggests, and that might be a secondary theme to focus on. But we felt, first and foremost, slow down. We talk about restraint and composure is, let's create more time and space between a stimulus and your response. So he was getting that stimulus of people like putting up their hands and saying no to the process, and he was getting frustrated. So we tried to give him some ways to slow down. But before I talk about what we landed on to make this easier for him and make make it feel more like this was within him to do it, what do you think? I'd be curious if we could have somebody raise their hand or ask a question if that's easier to do. What would you suggest would be a good one to start on if you wanted to leverage a strength? Because again, I remember our goal is not to say, hey, work on restraint and composure and work on intentionality and vision. Those are feeling a little hard for him right now because he does get emotional. He does get triggered. We want to make it feel more within him. So which strength does he have, or what's one or two strengths you could say, hey, if you use this to your advantage, this is some way you can make this more workable for you. So if somebody wants to raise out their hand and suggest one or type one in, that would be great. While we're waiting for somebody to do that, I'll just note one other thing that came up when we dug into intentionality. I put a hypothesis out there about integrity. He's so sky high in integrity. I said to him, I wonder if one possible option with intentionality is that you're so high in integrity, you get very fixated, like this is the way we're going to do it. This is the course we're going to take. So it's maybe a little bit more difficult for you to veer from that and be more open to going in a different direction. And I pointed out to him that, hey, you know, if the guy at 3M who came up with Post-it notes, what he was trying to do was innovate a better adhesive. I said, if he created the stuff that was used in Post-it notes and came up with that crappy adhesive that didn't really work that well, he would have just thrown that in the garbage if he stayed to his course. But he was willing to make that course correction and say, what else could I do with this if I want to, you know, create something innovative? So that was something that landed with him, that integrity might be an overstrength. So any thoughts you have on how these things might be an overstrength? So here's one, or what could be a strength we could leverage. So Isabella typed in, concern and interactivity will help me slow down and start from the place he needs to bring people along. So that's an interesting thought. So I think that's a great idea, Isabel, on interactivity. I've started very recently to refer to integrity as sort of a gateway facet. In other words, if you don't have that, if you're not in front of people with that quantity and quality of communication, it's gonna be hard to get things done. But that tells us he's in front of people a lot. He's having good back and forth with them. So maybe that's something we can build on. And then I think Isabella's other idea of concern is a good one too. It's like if he stops looking at people as adversaries who are preventing him from sharing his brilliant process, and say, hey, you know what, these guys want to get results, and I want to help them develop, I want to help them become better innovators, help them maybe experiment with new things. If I want them to experiment with my process stuff, I need to kind of meet them where they are and try to encourage them to use some analogies, simplify things, so they'll be better able to do that. And Matt added, agreed, I'd focus on concern. Matt, let's unmute you again and have you just elaborate on that a little bit more. I don't know if I can unmute Isabella or not, but I know I can unmute you. So Matt, anything you want to add there on concern?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So, okay, great. On the concern piece, it's with this combination, it looks as if there's concern, but then a reaction, that unrestrained reaction to the concern. And so I just see that I'd want to get a feel for, okay, good concern, what's your reaction? And let's talk about how that concern turns into this unrestrained reaction, and just give some coaching there about how to, this is, leads back to the composure piece, how to have the concern that people really recognize you have, but then not go unrestrained, lose composure as you react. It's as simple as that, to just really tune into style and just use that, that high level of concern, but just have the, give the person some fine tuning about how to take that concern, but then communicate it back with people, how to, you know, how to be in a place of composure with people around that. I'm not sure how else to say it.
Yeah, no, I think that's useful as well. I think you and Isabella are on the same wavelength here very much. And yeah, I think it's sort of like, if you can slow down enough, it's within you to show that caring and that interest in other people's stuff. You're just not slowing down enough to let it happen was an issue. I think I also encouraged them to think about authenticity a little bit, to be authentic, to say, hey, guys, you know what? I got to own it. You know, sometimes I got to recognize I get a little impatient. You know, I'm so eager to push this forward, but I realize that sometimes I can be a little, I can overreact sometimes, and I really want to slow things down and make sure that I'm not giving you guys, cutting you guys off and giving you guys a chance to share what's going on a little bit. So that seemed to help out as well. So some great observations there. So I appreciate that. I'll just kind of wrap this up by saying where we landed with Edward with this, so I can then turn it over to Michael. So we did land on restraint and vision and intentionality. One thing I recommended to him, this is something I got from Michael and Michael got it from somebody else, is our influence formula, which we call influence equals persuasion divided by resistance, or I equals P divided by R. So the way that works is we say, you know, in the face of disagreement or conflict, we have a couple options if we want to influence. We can try to persuade harder, increase the value of P, or we can try to decrease the value of R and lower the resistance. And, you know, most people, including Edward, when he was up with that instance, he's like, we must do it this way. This has worked in the past. This process works. So he's trying to convince them, I've done this. This works. And when we try to persuade harder, if you've tried this with your spouse, you may have experienced this as well. What happens? People get more defensive, they get more entrenched, and less inclined to engage. So it's far more effective to focus on decreasing that value of R, the resistance. And you do that by asking questions like, hey guys, help me understand what's getting in the way of you embracing this process. Help me appreciate how I can be more helpful to you in getting us all on the same page and getting aligned about who's doing what and so forth. And by definition, by asking those questions, that's going to help him slow down as well, while also getting more attuned to what's going on with others. If he's more attuned to others, more likely his wisdom will seem practical, more likely his vision will be to land as well. So that's something he really liked a lot. I encouraged him to keep building with vision. I said, you know what? You need to keep telling the innovation story in vision. So not just from previous roles, because that can get a little old to people. It's like, well, that was there, this is here. But you know, if you have early wins going on at Topco, what you need to be doing is sharing things like, you know, what's something great that somebody did? What's a lesson that was learned? And can we get out of that jargon too and use that everyday language? And then another trick from Michael's bag of tricks, I also suggested premortems. So premortems are just a great idea for practical wisdom and intentionality. So a premortem would be before the initiative even gets underway, you have the team brainstorm, okay, guys, what could go wrong with this? Okay, let's assume it's 6 months from now and we just have not innovated at all. We haven't moved it forward. We haven't made it happen. What happened? What went wrong? So we're doing a premortem to find leading indicators rather than lagging indicators. And I said to him, you know, it doesn't get much more early being among the first to address a course correction than doing a premortem. So that was something that worked for him pretty well. He also had been reading All the Leader You Can Be and liked the idea of audience agenda, which Suzanne talks about in that book, which is instead of like rushing forward with your point of view, to the point that many of you have been making, thinking about, well, first, before I speak, let me get attuned to where is this audience right now? Do they even care about what I'm saying? What do they care about? And slowing down enough to say, I've got to speak to that side of the agenda and not default to my own agenda. So that went pretty well. And in general, he came out of this really loving it. In fact, Michael, you know, to tee you up in just a moment, I talked to him about some of our most recent research about high growth versus low growth companies and innovation. He really wanted to hear more about that. But just to wrap up, you know, the final question I always ask, and you feel free to steal this question if you're so inclined. A question that worked well for him was, you know, as you reflect on our hour in this conversation, I want you to reflect on our process and our content together. And as you think about our process and content, was this valuable? And if so, what was particularly powerful, relevant, surprising, useful, however you want to finish that sentence? And his response verbatim was, you went through a discovery of my strengths and weaknesses, and I appreciated the balance of that. The ideas you offered met my need, and that I equals P divided by R, that's extremely important. It's a real game change for me to focus on decreasing resistance in addition to slowing down and finding, you know, alternative ways to manage my emotions. I also sent them our article on restraint, which includes, in addition to ABCD, which Michael mentioned, the idea of a hierarchy of triggers. Create a list of all the stuff that triggers you to different degrees. Capture what's your current default response. Then capture what would be a more deliberate aspirational response when you are triggered or upset. So that's a little bit about Edward. So at this point, I want to make sure I give ample time for Michael. So I'm going to turn it over to Michael to have more of a general discussion of innovation. But if you have any further questions about Edward, in his case, by all means, feel free to type in a question or raise your hand so we can take a look at that again. But Michael, why don't you turn it over to innovation? And if you just let me know when you want me to advance the slides, I will do so.
Okay, great. Thanks, Scott. So I want to talk about innovation in the context of what we just heard about Edward. So if you could advance, Scott and I are in two different cities. So Scott, if you could go to the next slide, that'd be great. So to summarize our research on innovation, so we looked at about 700 or 1,000 different EXPIs, and we did some research on differentiating those leaders who were seen as leading innovative teams from those leaders who were not seen as leading innovative teams. We have an article that's on the portal if you want any more details. So I'm just going to go over this pretty quickly. But what we found that differentiated those kinds of leaders was three basic things. One, they reduce risk by aligning the team around a common cause. Two, they created a safe environment that supported reasonable risk taking. In other words, to be innovative. And three, they facilitated and supported a healthy debate. Now, what was also fascinating was what we found did not differentiate the leaders who ran innovative teams from those that didn't. And that was around being the smartest person in the room. So it was not that you had the best ideas yourself, but that essentially you facilitated a healthy debate to get the best ideas from the group. And from what you can see a little bit in terms of Edward's profile and what Scott said about him, he came across as the smartest guy in the room. You know, I've got the right process. Why don't you folks just follow me? So he was doing a number of things that were, according to our research, were getting in the way of his leading innovative teams. So, if you could go to the next slide, Scott. So here were some sample comments from his feedback. So don't forget, the first one was finding a common cause. But his feedback was, you're trying to do too much and confusing people with too many initiatives. So people did not find a common cause. As a matter of fact, you know, we have an item about that. And he scored really low on that one in terms of finding a common cause and In other words, there's an item, does this person help you feel part of something bigger and more meaningful and have a common cause? He got a 3.64 out of that. So that was pretty low. So the second step was making it safe. And as Matt has made it clear, he was not making it that safe for people because of his loss of restraint and composure. And Scott mentioned his Edward's interaction with his wife. So this was a verbatim again from his comments from his colleagues. Your facial expressions will sometimes show how obvious displeasure in what he's hearing. So he was not making it safe for people to express their ideas and thoughts. And finally, number three was facilitating healthy debate, but he makes it obvious. So when it is obvious the same approach is not getting the desired solutions, ask the team for a better way to get the desired solution. So he was not taking advantage of the wisdom of the team. He was trying to force fit what worked for him in a previous organization right onto this person, right into his new job. He was not facilitating a healthy debate. As a matter of fact, in assertiveness, there's a question, you know, do you shut down discussion? The answer was a 3.79. He did shut down discussion. And the last item, our favorite, which is actually the lowest scoring item of all 90, for everybody that takes this. Number 90 is helps others appreciate the positive value of conflict. He got a 3.46. So he was not facilitating healthy debate. So again, in terms of what we found critical that distinguishes the leaders that were facilitating and getting innovation out of their teams versus those that don't, he was not exemplifying those things that help create innovation. So next slide. So our research found a lot of items that statistically significantly differentiate those two types of leaders. But I'm not about to present you with a slide with 37 items. So these were the items that for those geeks out there that were significant to the 0.001 level, which in everyday language means these were items that you were 99.9% sure differentiated those leaders that led innovative teams versus those that didn't. So the first four were in character, the next five were in substance, and the last three were in style. Now, again, not going to go over all of them, but item number two, others find that his or her deliberate style clarifies thinking. That was his fifth lowest rated item. And the only two of these 12 items where he scored above a four were number 10, does not shy away from making his opinions known. And 11, challenges other points of view and expects a reasonable response. So he was good at getting his opinion out. He was not good at listening to others. So, Scott, next slide. So any kind of thoughts, comments, reactions, questions about Edward and the research we found on innovation? Because what essentially our research was saying was that while Edward was trying to lead innovation, he was doing many things that were getting in the way. All right, so Scott, let me know if you have any questions or someone raises their hand.
Yeah, we'll see if any of those questions come in. Nothing so far, but I'm sure there'll be some ideas out there. I guess while we're waiting for questions to come in, Michael, you mentioned a few things that were maybe a little surprising to you going in or surprised people in general. When we ask people, they often assume that practical wisdom could be real important for this quality of unleashing innovation. Any other surprises for you? I mean, I'm sure you saw some things you expected to see, but anything that seemed a little counterintuitive to you at first or to others who saw the data?
Well, you know, what the main thing that was a shock was, as you said, that practical wisdom was not a differentiator. As a matter of fact, it was the opposite in a sense. In other words, it wasn't being confident that you know you're right, but actually it was humility. In other words, it was being open to other ideas. So it was the humility and the concern you can see there, resonance. So it was really all the kind of emotional intelligence kinds of items and facets that were really critical. And the other thing we found was that when we looked at gender, women in general tended to be better at those things than men. So that was the not totally surprising, but a little surprising that when it comes to promoting people, particularly when you want innovation, it seems that there's still a tendency to hire men, even though on average, women seem to be doing better at leading innovation.
Hmm. Yeah. So just a note here, I toggled back because we had a couple requests to go back and just keep this, linger on this slide so people could digest a little longer, Michael. So that's why we're going to just stick on this for a while. But as people look at it, just feel free to raise your hand. I'd just be curious to see reactions. I mean, as or any observations, you can, if you're not, again, if you're not in a quiet place and you'd rather not raise your hand, you could just type into the question box and we'll read out your comment there as we've been doing as well. You know, not everybody's in a place where you can speak and be heard without background noise, so that's there. I guess while we're waiting that, I guess what's interesting is not only what's here, but what's not here. So as I just look through the model, Michael, we don't see authenticity here. You know, one concept that I don't think, Michael, you may not have even heard me use this. I've been talking about this in some of our recent certification programs and some of my recent insight calls. You know, we're still learning, Michael and I, even though we've done hundreds of these. You know, I have one theory that there are facets that I would call more of a self focus, and there are other facets that have more of an other focus. So in the self focus category, and this is, you know, not strict, of course, but I would say the self focus facets for me would include authenticity, practical wisdom, and confidence would probably be the ones that dominate most, maybe vision to some degree. And then the ones that focus more on the other rather than the self, I would say concern for sure. I would say humility. I would definitely say resonance. I would say inclusiveness. You know, assertiveness might be a balance perhaps of a little bit of self and a little bit of other. But I don't know, your reaction, Michael, looking at with that kind of construct in mind, which I don't think I've shared with you before, how do you know, this seems to be to favor that other focus more than the self focus. But any reaction to that?
Yeah, I would agree with that in general, which is kind of in line with what we found was that, again, it's not being the smartest in the room. It's facilitating a process to get it out, to get the best ideas out from other people and have a good, fair fight about it. You know, innovation is not, you don't reach innovation by consensus, which often means the lowest common denominator that everyone kind of agree on. It's really about finding what's best. The other thing I want to make clear is that while a lot of the practical wisdom ones did not come up as significantly differentiating those two different types of leaders, it doesn't mean it's not important. It just means it's not a differentiator. So it could be that, for example, the item on even Envision, which did not come out significant of, you know, knows the latest trends. That did not come out as it doesn't mean it's not important. It may mean that's just table stakes. In other words, because something didn't come out significantly different doesn't mean the negative of it, that those that didn't come out significantly different get in the way of innovation. It could mean you're just table stakes.
Yeah, or if you're rated very low in quality, like knowing industry and trends, that could work against you. You know, having a lot of it may not be a differentiator, but it could still be a problem if you're low in it, for for sure.
Correct.
That would seem to make sense. But yeah, at this point, and I think what's landed with me as we look at this, Michael, as much as anything, and again, by all means, feel free to raise your hand if you have an observation or type in a comment. We'd love to hear more from you in our last 8 or 9 minutes here, is this notion of assertiveness. You know, it makes me feel like assertiveness is somewhat of a rare bird sometimes in these leadership conversations. You know, Michael and Andy Atkins and I on our team, we're in the thick of developing a new team assessment, which we'll be sharing with everybody eventually, still early days. But one thing I really enjoyed, Michael, in those conversations is that I think we've got, I don't know if we have all these qualities going on, but I feel like we've had really good assertiveness. Like with Michael and Andy and I, can you debate something and come away feeling actually more excited and more energized rather than, oh, that was grueling. And boy, Michael, like cut me off at the knees today, but I guess we got somewhere. That seems to be a real differentiator. And that seems to be difficult for leaders to be able to engage sometimes in that kind of constructive debate and have it feel positive.
Right.
Okay, Michael, hang on a second though. Halvor has raised his hand here. So I'm gonna unmute Halvor Holter from Denmark here. And Halvor, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
All right, Halvor, how are things in Copenhagen today?
They're very good, thank you.
Good. So yeah. Any observations or questions here on the case or on this innovation research?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about the things that you mentioned lastly, Scott, and the balance between not knowing it all kind of standpoint combined with the assertiveness. So in the way I think about it is that, you know, in one way you show your humility, not having all of the answers, but at the same time also exemplifying the directness and assertiveness in terms of speaking your mind. So I think it both encourages people to speak their mind in that sense, but also opens up for in terms of the humility and resonance and the willingness to understand other viewpoints.
Right, because don't forget, if you're looking at this slide that Scott has up, if you look at item, it's not an item number, but the number 11.
Yeah.
Challenges other points of view and expects a reasonable response. So it's not just that I challenge Scott, but I expect him to push back. In other words, to have an open, honest disagreement about the facts, you know, not name calling, you know, nothing personal, but that's what gets out. And as Scott said, it gets the juices flowing. It gets the brain going. It really, you know, if you can, if Scott can defend his point of view, he might change my mind, or vice versa. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, and Michael, you know, just to tout Michael from home, Michael does a really nice job of that. I can send a whole bunch of things kind of challenging different items that he's working on for this team assessment. And instead of like writing back and begrudgingly saying, oh, I guess I got to look at that, he'll be like, you know, I really like it when you do this, Scott, because you make me challenge my own thinking. And it's like, wow, that's kind of rewarding and that's exciting. And it makes me want to be that much more engaged in the process. Halvor, one other quick question for you. I've noticed a bit of a worrisome pattern sometimes. I wonder if you've seen this with the many leaders you've put through this in the Nordic countries, where I get a little nervous sometimes when I see a leader who's high in authenticity and practical wisdom and confidence. You know, so it's sort of like, I'm willing to speak up, I know my stuff, and damn the torpedoes, I'm going to go full speed ahead with my action bias. Have you seen that pattern, or does that resonate with you?
I've seen that as well, and it can be a true eye-opener in my book for an executive to become aware of this overstrength to be able to value other facets like humility or resonance in that sense. And I don't know how, and this has been the question during this portion of the webinar as well, whether there are industry-specific tendencies here as well, also when it comes to innovation. But to answer your question, Scott, yes, I've seen this, and for some it can be a true eye-opener that these can be strengths overused.
Mm. Yeah, thank you, Halvor. Sometimes what I'll say to leaders like that is, let's say you are the smartest person in the room, or you're projecting that you're the smartest person in the room. What's the impact on the room? If you put it in the context of innovation, if I perceive that Michael's the smartest guy in the room, I might just be like, well, I guess I'll just sit back and wait for him to tell us what we're going to do, because, you know, he's got it all figured out. One other observation I want to share, Shirley Haggerty typed in, just a reaction, I think, to our discussion in general. I like the idea of table stakes, she says, and gateway facets. You know, those are some interesting ways to think about the model, I think. If practical wisdom, integrity, et cetera, are missing, it can detract. And whereas if there's resonance and inclusiveness there, it can further the agenda. So that's a good way to think of it. Yeah, I have started to think of interactivity as a gateway facet. I sometimes think of resonance as a keystone facet. You know, if we don't have that resonance, it's going to be hard for our wisdom to be practical, right? If we're not attuned to what others are thinking and feeling and wanting and needing, can our wisdom truly land as practical no matter how much wisdom we have? Can our vision land as relevant and inspiring to our audience? Can we be seen as inclusive, and can we be seen as being high in concern? So those are valuable thoughts as well. We just have another minute or two, so I'm going to kick it over to Michael for any final thoughts or observations from you before we wrap up for today.
I appreciate the people who participated, like Matt and Halvor and Shirley, and your participation is really helpful. Appreciate it.
Great, thank you. Well, just a few general comments before we sign off for today. In case you haven't been to the content portal lately, I added a couple new articles that I think will be useful to you. We've now got articles basically covering the whole orientation process and different articles for every piece of the insights process. And I've actually already written, and Michael has contributed to, our next article, which we're going to hold out until October. You know, we try to promise you some new intellectual property for the community every month. So this webinar is for this month. And we will, by the way, have a recording of this webinar online, you know, probably by tomorrow. And you can listen to it there. But next month's article will be a piece on how do you deal with a phenomenon I've come to call all or nothing thinking. In other words, some leaders tend to perceive when they're looking at a development theme, well, I've either got to be one extreme or another. So that's an article that'll be coming out in a few weeks. But in the meantime, on behalf of Michael, Vula, and our team, who's quietly been assisting us along the way, and everybody who's signed in, thanks to all of you, Shirley, Isabella, Halvor, Matt, everybody who chimed in, lots of great questions and observations, and you can always go back to the webinar recording and listen to it again. And finally, if you have any thoughts on what you'd like to cover in December's webinar, we're certainly open to suggestions. We're going to schedule that soon, and we're going to have another of these webinars going forward. So with that in mind, thanks so much for tuning in. On behalf of everyone at Bates, have a great day, and we look forward to connecting with you again soon. Thanks so much, and talk to you later.